Monitor now invites you to Meet the Press, America's press conference of the air, winner of every major award in its field. Today's guest on Meet the Press will be the daughter of India's Prime Minister Nehru, Mrs. Indira Gandhi, mentioned as a possible successor to her father. We will bring you today's program in a moment.
This is Frank McGee, your host on Sunday Night Monitor. One of our guests on a recent broadcast was Lieutenant Colonel John A. Powers, whom you all know as the voice of Mercury Control. We asked him to describe the new Gemini spacecraft and explain what it's designed to do, and here's what he said.
The Titan II rocket, first of all, uses what we call storable fuels. These are the kinds of fuels that we're getting into in the newer rockets. The spacecraft itself is designed to perform a much more sophisticated mission than we're accustomed to in Mercury. Long-duration Earth orbits with two men, and by long-duration here I'm talking about 2 weeks, plus the rendezvous and docking, which is vital to our lunar landing program. And probably of greatest interest to the people, the public, is the fact that we'll be opening the hatch and stepping out while in orbit.
A forecast of things to come. Just one of the many interesting guests we have each week on Sunday Night Monitor. Join us, won't you, on NBC Radio.
Each of us can recall some outstanding persons we have met during our lives. Often a teacher is one of them, for a teacher makes a lasting contribution to the life of every student he teaches. When you choose your career, consider what's probably the most important profession of all. During April, Teaching Career Month, you may obtain free information by writing to Teaching, NEA, Washington, D.C. That's Teaching, NEA, Washington, D.C. And now meet the press. Today's guest, Mrs. Indira Gandhi, daughter of India's Prime Minister Nehru. Our panel consists of Lawrence Spivak, producer of Meet the Press, Marguerite Higgins of Newsday, Philip Potter of the Baltimore Sun, and Ellie Abel of NBC News. Bryson Rash is our moderator.
Our guest today on Meet the Press has been called the most important woman in India. She is Indira Gandhi, the daughter and confidant of Prime Minister Nehru. And like her father and grandfather, she has served as president of the Congress Party, the ruling political party in India. As her father's official hostess, she is also the First Lady of India. She has frequently been mentioned as his successor when he steps down. Now we will have the first question from Lawrence E. Spivak.
Mrs. Gandhi, the American people have been concerned about the health of your father, and I'm sure would be interested in knowing how he is. Since you've just come from India, I'm sure have been in close touch with him. Do you mind telling us what the state of his health is today?
He's very much better now and has resumed all his normal work.
As one of his confidants, can you tell us, does he plan to stay on indefinitely as Prime Minister?
Well, that depends on the party.
But as far as he himself is concerned, he is ready and willing.
I wouldn't know.
How serious do you think it would be for India if your father did decide to step down?
I think he's been able to form a pretty strong base and that policies would carry on.
Is there anybody in India today that you can name who could take his place at this point?
I don't think it would be very tactful for me to name anybody. But I think there are people, and the most important thing is they should work as a team.
Ms. Gandhi, there have been reports that during his illness particularly, you have taken on additional powers and additional work. Can you tell us what your duties are for your father at the present time?
Well, these reports are not true. I'm doing just what I used to do before, which is very mixed. It's partly work for the party, partly social welfare work.
But you do not handle any policy matters for him?
No, unless it comes up in the party executive.
There's a recent report in the New York Herald Tribune which said, and I quote, "Highly placed sources in India are persuaded that Prime Minister Nehru has decided on his successor, Mrs. Indira Nehru Gandhi." Now, no one is closer to your father than you. What is the truth of that report?
Well, he's always said that this is not for him to do. It's up to the Congress Party to elect its leader.
Would you like to be Prime Minister of India?
I would not.
May I ask you one other question? The reports in the press said that you brought a special message from your father to the president. Is there anything that you can tell us about it? Was there any special significance to the message, or was it just one of greetings?
It's just one of greetings.
Continue the questioning now with Mr. Potter.
Mr. Gandhi, I'd like to pursue one of Mr. Spivak's questions. It was once said that your father was like a giant banyan tree towering over India and under whose shade nothing grew. Is he still casting as much shade, or is he making more of an effort to delegate authority and build up a leadership capable of succession?
In my view, he has been making that effort for a long time, perhaps 4 or 5 years. In the life of a nation, it is necessary sometimes to have shade for things to grow.
You think the sunlight is coming through now?
Well, if you like to put it that way.
I know that your father has worked for 17 years to build a secular state and a parliamentary democracy. What have the communal riots done to affect his plans and his hopes? Are they tearing up the fabric that he's created?
Well, these have been rather isolated cases, and of course we've all been very greatly distressed at what has happened. But I don't think it has disturbed the communal harmony of India as a nation.
Do you see any signs that Hindu chauvinism is growing, for instance?
There have always been elements who felt that way, but one has to control them.
Ms. Higgins?
Mrs. Gandhi, one question more on the political scene. You said you did not want to be prime minister. If the party nominated you, would you refuse to serve? And if elected, would you refuse to run if you were nominated? And if elected, would you refuse to serve?
Well, you know, I'm not a member of parliament. And in India, you cannot be in the government without being a member of parliament.
If the will of the people of India were such that you were clearly the wish of the majority, would you serve as prime minister?
I find that very difficult to believe, that there will be such an overwhelming demand, or whatever you like to call it.
But you aren't going to say that you would refuse to serve?
Well, shall I say that 90% I would refuse?
90%?
Yeah.
Well, that's a pretty high figure. I'd like to turn to the international affairs here. India believes in non-alignment as a matter of policy. Why wouldn't a non-aligned Kashmir, loyal neither to India or subservient neither to India or Pakistan, be the easiest way out of a chronically difficult situation?
Well, it seems to me that it would become a kind of hotbed of intrigue to have a small country like that hedged in, as it would be, by Russia, China, on two sides.
Has anyone in India ever seriously considered non-alignment for Kashmir?
I don't think so, no.
You know that a number of international friends of India have brought the matter up. Has the attitude of your leaders been totally negative towards a non-alignment for Kashmir? Has it been ruled out flatly?
Well, I don't believe in being dogmatic about anything. But I do feel that the Kashmir question has to be seen in the much wider perspective of how it would affect, India, the whole subcontinent, really.
Madam Gandhi, how about the rapprochement now between Red China and Pakistan? How does that affect India's national security?
Well, it complicates the matter tremendously, because it means that our whole border is very vulnerable now.
Would you say that the Pakistan and China rapprochement means that an attack on India by Red China is more likely than it was before this rapprochement?
I should say yes, because, well, we don't know what Pakistan would do in such an event.
Yes. Mr. Abel?
You've been quoted, Mrs. Gandhi, as complaining of United States favoritism toward Pakistan. What evidence do you have to support that accusation?
Well, it wasn't an accusation. What I really said was that we are very grateful to the USA for the economic and military help which we had received. And then I added that the people of India were unhappy, or I think distressed was the word I used, at what we thought was a partisan attitude on the question of Kashmir. That is the view in India.
Well, would you care to explain a little bit? I think some of us are a little surprised to hear you say that. The United States government has been admittedly in an awkward situation in trying to cultivate the friendship of both countries. But I quote you here, this is from the New York Times, "We feel the West is on Pakistan's side no matter what." Would you care to recite the evidence on which you base that statement?
Well, it has seemed to us in the speeches made by the U.S. delegate and the talks we've had with various people who've come from the USA that they are apt to ignore the facts, of what seem to us the facts of the case. That is, that Pakistan did commit aggression against Kashmir and that we went there at the invitation of the then Kashmir government as well as the political party of the state. Certain basic things have to be accepted before you can go on to the next step and to find a solution.
How can your government justify its rather persistent refusal to give the people of Kashmir any voice in determining their own future?
Well, the people have had three elections, and on the other hand, there have been no such elections in Pakistan, either in the whole of Pakistan or even in the territory of Kashmir, which they call Azad Kashmir. They have no representation at all.
But the people of Kashmir have not, in fact, had a chance to vote on whether they should remain part of India, have they?
Well, not directly, but they knew the policy of the National Conference. And there is also a party there called the Plebiscite Front. They had an opportunity to vote for that.
Mr. Spivak.
Madam Gandhi, India has always espoused the principle of self-determination for almost every other nation, in the UN and in speeches of many of your leaders. Why is it that you refuse to allow Kashmir to apply that principle of self-determination?
Well, as I just told Mr. Abel, that they have had this chance of voting in elections. And Kashmir isn't, of course, a separate nation as such. We regard it as a part of India. And I don't know whether any country would allow a part of it to vote on this matter. You yourself in the U.S. went to war over this question, I think, of secession of the southern states.
But you regard it as part of India, but Pakistan doesn't, and there are many people in Kashmir, evidently, who don't regard it as part of India. Wouldn't the simplest way be to have a plebiscite, as I think the U.N. Resolution demands and India once agreed to?
Well, there were several resolutions in the UN, and the first of them was regarding the removal of the Pakistani troops. Now, that has not been done. Therefore, if the first two resolutions, the ceasefire, which also is being constantly violated by Pakistan, as you may have seen that they accused India of violating it, but when the UN observers went there, they have said, no, it was Pakistan who violated it. So if those two conditions are complied with, then one could think of the third.
You think then that if Pakistan withdrew its troops, that there would be a chance that India would agree to a plebiscite?
Well, you know, the situation is so changed since then because China is in the picture now. We can't ignore that fact and sort of throw the whole frontier wide open.
Well, isn't the very fact that China has attacked you, doesn't that make it even more important for you to come to some agreement with Pakistan since you have so many of your crack troops on that border?
We don't have troops on the Pakistani side at all. They've all withdrawn. But I do agree with you that it is very important for us to be friends with Pakistan, not only because of China, but because of the economic and social questions which both the countries face. It would be a tremendous help to us both if we were to function together and unitedly.
Recently, Madam Gandhi, Sheikh Abdullah, former Prime Minister of Kashmir, who had been in jail for 10 years, was released. Does this mean that there is a chance for some compromise on the Kashmir issue, that there is a chance for a fresh approach on the Kashmir issue?
Well, we're always willing to discuss the matter and to talk it over. But the Sheikh's release didn't really have anything to do with this. That was an internal matter, as his arrest had been 10 years before.
Mr. Potter?
Mrs. Gandhi, he was arrested for preaching independence for Kashmir 11 years ago. I was kept in jail for 11 years and was finally brought to trial on treason charges. Why was it suddenly decided to drop the charges and release him? What was the purpose of it?
Well, this had nothing to do with the central government. This is purely a matter of the Kashmir government. But the Sheikh himself has said in his speeches now and while he was in prison that this was a false charge. He did not preach independence.
Well, isn't he now urging independence as
no.
a solution for Kashmir?
No, he's not. He specifically said that I have not talked about independence.
Well, why is it Parliament seems to be in an uproar, a furor, about his recent statements up in Kashmir?
He has said all kinds of things. And some of them have not pleased Parliament, and some of them we thought were, well, not very happy statements. But it's difficult to comment on them till he comes to Delhi and we talk with him.
There's been some talk that he might be rearrested. Can you give us any information?
I don't think he will be.
On the matter of arms aid, Mr. Y.B. Chavan, your defense minister, is going to be here shortly to present plans or hopes for increased arms aid from the United States. If the United States shows any willingness to increase its arms aid, is India willing to give any assurance that the United States would be the major supplier of arms and not Russia?
Well, I think you better ask Mr. Chavan about this when he comes. We want to be friends with both countries, and I think it is important, geographical position being what it is.
Ms. Higgins.
What about the fascinating subject of the Sino-Soviet split and its effect on India? Do you feel that Russia is exercising a restraining influence on China? Is there any evidence to that effect?
Russia did at the time of the Chinese aggression.
I understand that, but I mean now.
Well, I don't know if they're on talking terms with regard to these things now.
Do you have a feeling that they are not on talking terms on any of these issues in which India is a part?
Well, reading the newspapers, it does seem that they're more involved in, in their own personal quarrels.
Do you feel that if Red China attacked India, that Russia might send air power, equipment, and so forth to help India go that far against its one-time bloc ally?
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't be able to comment on that.
But in the event of any quarrel with China erupting again into fighting, it is almost assumed, is it not, that Western air cover would have to be supplied, British and American?
I hope so.
Does this put a big dent in the policy of non-alignment? How does this square with that?
Well, it seems to me that it's alignment which has been very sharply dented because of Pakistan has got together with China and countries like Great Britain and France are also having far greater contacts with China.
But is this not a de facto alliance between the West and India, to put it straight, if in fact it is an understanding that we provide air cover in the event of an attack? Isn't this an alliance between Britain, the United States, and India against a possible aggression by Red China?
Well, it's an understanding.
I see we're stuck on the matter of the word alliance. In some of the reports of the State Department here concerning Red China and India, it has been stated that despite the great leap, as I put it, backward of the last couple of years in Red China, the Chinese have economically done more in the last decade than India. What would be your comment on that? Done more for their people?
I don't really know on what the internal situation of China is.
Mr. Abel.
Mrs. Gandhi, you are, although not an official of the Indian government, a rather important Indian politician. What has been the effect of the Sino-Soviet split on the Indian Communist Party and the sympathizers? Who bulked fairly large in India at one time.
There's a split in the Indian Communist Party, too.
I'm aware of that, but what is the practical effect of that in Parliament, for example, or in the political life of the country?
Well, the Communists have not made much, dent in Indian politics, except, as you know, in the state of Kerala. And I don't think this is going to make very much difference one way or another.
You don't believe that as a result of the split and the quarreling between them, that the overall political strength of the party will be diminished in any way?
It might well be diminished, but I think it's too early to say.
Mr. Spivak.
There have been reports, Madam Gandhi, that India is again facing a famine. Is there any truth at all to those reports?
No, I haven't heard of anything.
Have you recently had a drought?
We have had drought and a shortage of certain commodities, but there's been no overall shortage.
And there is no shortage of food of any consequence?
No.
Madam Gandhi, this may be a rather touchy subject, but I've read that the slaughter of cattle is forbidden in India for religious purposes, and that this is one of the reasons why you do have some trouble about food. Is there been any change at all on the matter of slaughtering cattle in India?
Well, as you said, it is a very touchy subject for Hindus. As far as I know, there hasn't been any change in the law, the rule, custom. But there is an effort to have, to look after them better.
Look after them
better? After the cattle, so that they don't roam around and destroy crops.
You see, they not only are being used for food, but that they themselves destroy food?
Well, this was a problem at one time, but it isn't now, as I said.
Mr. Potter.
Mrs. Gandhi, in the 1961 10-year census, your population had grown, I think, 7 million more than the most liberal prognostications, which caused enough concern so that you increased the funds for birth control by 5 times. Has there been any progress since then? The new 5-year plan has been underway now for 2 or 3 years.
There has been much more progress, I would say, in the last year than there had been previously, because people are taking it much more seriously, not only from the point of view of providing funds, but the whole program.
Has it brought anything in the nature of a drop in the birth rate, or?
Well, it'll take time for that.
Ms. Higgins?
Would you venture any prediction concerning the population explosion as to when the pressure of the population in India will be brought under control? I've heard, for example, for China, 1970, 1972. Would that be a...
I wouldn't be able to say no.
You have there is no timetable in the Indian mind as far as the...
I don't think there's any definite timetable.
There's a fascinating subject here in America of increased trade with the Soviet bloc. Is the trade between India and the Soviet bloc increasing, and how has the promised aid from Russia to India been forthcoming? Has it been delivered according to schedule? What about the MiGs, for example, that were supposed to be forthcoming in the manufacture of those?
Well, I think the program is going ahead, and trade also has increased. We recently had a fair there, a trade fair, which was successful.
What about the manufacture of the MiGs, the promised manufacture of the MiGs inside India?
As I said, that it is, they are, the step by step is going ahead. I don't
that
know.
That program is going ahead.
Well, talks and so on. It hasn't begun, I don't think.
The actual manufacture, the plants have not been assembled and no products have been
delivered.
Well,
I don't have detailed information, but I think that they're proceeding with it, but nothing positive has been achieved.
I should like to warn you at this time, we just have about 2 minutes left.
Mrs. Gandhi, what lessons did the Indian government draw from the fact that the Chinese were able so successfully to carry out this aggression in the north?
Well, we have to be better prepared. We have thought that we could, that we need not concentrate on the military side, and that we should look after our economic development. Now we have to lay greater stress on the military side, which we are doing, as well as on the development of those areas.
What would be your guess about the personal political future of Mr. Krishnamenon in the light of those events?
Well, I've said many times here before that he hasn't really had any position in our party, and that remains the same now.
Mr. Spivak.
Madam Gandhi, the reports here are that he has a great deal of influence on your father and also on you. Is that true?
No, it is not.
On your father or both?
Neither.
Krishnamenon at one time thought that the United States ought to get out of Asia altogether. Do you, or can you tell us, does your father think that we ought to do that?
Well, it depends in what way, because there are many problems which would be easier to solve if left to the people themselves. But then having once got involved, it's also not so easy to walk out. I mean, the ground has to be prepared and so on.
Mr. Potter?
Ms. Gandhi, in that connection, if we gave increased arms aid to India, as they're asking, could the India perhaps take some of the military burdens that we're now carrying in Southeast Asia? Would she be willing to do so?
Well, I don't know about whether it would be possible because we have this enormous frontier and the Chinese are concentrating troops. I don't know whether we could...
You have an emotional involvement in Southeast Asia, do you not, since it has much of your own culture there?
Yes, but, you know, I don't know if at this point we could divert anything from our own frontiers.
Well, I'm very sorry to interrupt, but our time is up. Thank you, Mrs. Gandhi, for being with us.
Thank you, Bryson Rash. In just a moment, we'll tell you how you can get a copy of this week's Meet the Press interview.
This is Dorothy Gordon speaking. By 1970, college enrollments will double. Will we be able to meet the demand? Who should go to college? The intellectual only? Or should all young people be given an opportunity for a higher education? Would 2 years of extension after high school benefit youth not equipped for more exhausting work? These and other questions are discussed with Fred Hechinger, education editor of the New York Times. Check this station for time and day of the Dorothy Gordon Youth Forums.
Every year has 52 weeks, but this week is special. It is Invest in America Week. Today has 1,440 minutes. This one is special. Use this minute to remind yourself that you are an investor in America. If you own a share of stock or a bond, if you've made so much as a down payment on a house or farm, if you own an enterprise, no matter how small, if you pay premiums on insurance, if there's a pension fund on which you draw, if you have a savings account, any of these make you a source of America's economic strength. This strength determines our capacity for national growth. How? Well, all these investments swell the great reservoir of national wealth needed to support that growth, to build new plants, expand old ones, create new jobs that mean more paychecks that keep us prosperous. By working, saving, investing, you're keeping our free enterprise system vital and healthy. Invest in America. Now, more details on Meet the Press. Today's guest was Mrs. Indira Gandhi, daughter of India's Prime Minister Nehru, and the panel consisted of Lawrence E. Spivak, producer of Meet the Press, Marguerite Higgins of Newsday, Philip Potter of the Baltimore Sun, and Ellie Abel of NBC News. For a printed copy of today's Meet the Press interview, send 10 cents in coin and a stamped self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, M-E-R-K-L-E, Merkle Press, 809 Channing Street, Northeast, Washington, D.C. Eye accidents threaten the vision of nearly 150,000 American school children every year. This is a loss that our nation cannot afford. The National Society for the Prevention of Blindness recommends a 100% eye safety program for every school shop, industrial arts class, and chemistry laboratory. Education for safety must keep pace with the increasing demands on the eyes of our youngsters. For information on starting an eye safety program in your community schools, write the National Society for the Prevention of Blindness, Box 426, New York 19, New York. That's the National Society for the Prevention of Blindness, Box 426, New York 19. Meet the Press will be heard again next week at this same time. The guest will be Winthrop Rockefeller, who plans to run against Governor Faubus for the governor of Arkansas. NBC Monitor News next on the NBC Radio Network.